Okay, so we are looking at the Tehillim in the Siddur. We're not looking at the whole Siddur, but right now we are looking at the Psukei Dezimra. Now, let me remind you that the very first thing we say after Baruch Sha'amar in the Munig of Ashkenazim is a long section starting with Hodu. Sephardim say it before Baruch Sha'amar because it is not Tehillim. Ashkenazim say it after Baruch Sha'amar. But Hodu is a long prayer that appears in Divrei Hayomim. It does not appear in Tehillim. And that is why Sephardim do not consider it part of Psukei Dezimra. Ashkenazim put it in because it is praise. So we're not going to talk about Hodu tonight because we're focusing on the Tehillim of David HaMelech. And today we're going to do a very short capital, which is good, because there's a lot of stuff on a very short capital. And that is right after Hodu, we have Mizmor Kuf, Mizmor 100. And that is called Mizmor Lesoda, a song for Thanksgiving. And a few things to remember. Before I do that, I want to talk about something about structurally, though, because the Siddur itself, the Tfilos, have a very, very interesting structure. And it is both a going up and then a going down, with Shemona Esrei being the apex. And there are two comparisons that are used, and the two comparisons are connected. Comparison number one is ascending to the Beis HaMikdash. It is said that Birchos HaShachar and Korbanos is like entering the Temple Mount. Then you have Psukei Dezimra, where you actually enter the temple courtyard called the Azorah. Then you have Kriyashma and Brachos, where you enter the Heichal, that's the temple building itself. And then Shmona Esrei, you enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So we divide, until through Shmona Esrei, we divide the Siddur into four portions: Korbanos, Birchas HaShachar and Korbanos are Temple Mount, Harabayas. Psukei Dezimra is courtyard called Azara. Birchos Kriyashma and Kriyashma is Heichal, you're actually in the temple. And Shmona Esrei is Kodesh HaKadoshim. But then you leave. So we say the following. We say that Tachanun Ashrei and Uvolatzion. Tachanun Ashrei Uvolatzion corresponds to leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim and being in the Heichal. Right? So you're still Ashrei. Tachanun. Heichal is the temple building.
Tachanun is the building?
Well, Tachanun Ashrei and Uvolatzion. You're in the temple building. You've left the Holy of Holies. And you're in the temple building. Olenu we'll talk about separately. Then, one second, let me see if I have this right. One second. Yes. Shir Shel Yom corresponds to Psukei Dezimra. It's also Tehillim. And that corresponds to being in the courtyard. And then, in Eretz Yisrael, Ein Kelokeinu and Pitam HaKtores is being in the Temple Mount. So you see, you have four steps up, three steps up to Shmona Esrei, and three steps down from Shmona Esrei, till you're ready to enter the world of your daily schedule. Okay, so again, let me just repeat the steps again. Birchas HaShachar and Korbanos, you are on the Temple Mount. Psukei Dezimra, you are in the temple courtyard. Kriyashma and the Brachos of Kriyashma, you are in the temple building. And then Shmona Esrei, you are in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Right, so that's the journey upwards. Now you have to take the journey downwards, back to regular life. So Tachanun, Ashrei, and Uvalitzion, you're leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim and you're in the temple building.
Could you Could you repeat that one more time?
From Tachanun Ashrei and Uvol Tzion, you're leaving the Kodesh Hakdashim and you're in the temple building. Shir Shel Yom, which corresponds to Pesukei Dezimra, Aleinu is a separate thing. I'll get to that in a moment. Shir Shel Yom corresponds to Pesukei Dezimra, where you are in the temple courtyards. And Ein Kelekeinu and Pitam Aktores corresponds to the Korbanos at the beginning, where you're on the temple mount. And therefore, you have three steps upwards. The apex is Shmona Esrei, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We have three steps upwards. We have three steps downwards. And we re-enter the regular world. That's why it is important. I mean, actually, Rav Pinkas, Zichrono Livracha, points out that sometimes, even, you know, even religious people, they might skip, like, the end. Daven Shmona Esrei, you know, and the other stuff, just like at a Pesach Seder sometimes. I mean, there are people, really, you know, religious people, not B'nai Torah, who kind of just skip the last two cups because they go to sleep after, you know, the Seder meal, they're tired. I mean, there's a chiyuv of Hallel, there's a chiyuv of two cups. It's a chiyuv. I mean, the stuff you do after this, after the meal, is as much of an op. Now, if you want to leave, you don't want to say Chag Gadya, that you're allowed to do. I mean, there are the things at the very end of the Seder are optional, even though they're minhagim. But until you have the fourth cup, you say Hallel in the fourth cup, those are the same chiyuvim as what you do beforehand. So you can't just like skip it, you know, because you're tired at the meal. Yeah.
What was the connection between skipping the end of the Pesach Seder and what we just said about ascending and descending?
No, because what I'm saying is there are people who think that any part of the davening after Shmona Esrei is kind of not that important, and there are people who may skip that. Again, I hasten to add that although I often have to leave early,
so
I
remain in the temple.
Yeah,
the whole
yeah. I just want to emphasize that even when if I have to leave davening early, I do say everything. I don't skip the last part of the thing, and you have to understand that this is a structure. Because the same way we have to raise ourselves to the highest level, we also have to go through a process of decompression. Because we have to, you know, it's like coming out of an extreme pressure situation into you might blow up, etc. Right? So you need to kind of decompress by moving through these different stages. So therefore, tefillah is like a pyramid in which you go up until Shmona Esrei, and then you go down from Shmona Esrei, and you take the Kedusha, and you bring it into everyday life. Now, to put it in Kabbalistic terminology, which is ultimately the same thing, but it's a different terminology, we talk about the four worlds, four spiritual worlds that exist. And the way it works, once again, is that Korbanos and Birchos HaShachar are this world. This is the world of Asiyah, the world of concrete action. Then we come to Pesukei Dezimra, which is the world of Yitzira, formation, going up. And then we come to Kriya Shema and the Brachos, which is the world of Bria, and that's the world of the angels. And then the Shmona Esrei is the world of Atzilus, pure unity with God. And then you have to descend. So Tachanun, again, the same type of thing. Tachanun, Ashrei, and Uval Tzion, you're leaving Atzilus, going back to Bria. Shir Shel Yom, you're in the world of formation, Yitzira. Ein Kelokeinu and Pitum HaKtoires is back in the world of Asiya. Now, you'll notice Aleinu has not been mentioned here at all. The truth is, Aleinu is a little bit different. Aleinu is supposed to be, although different nuschais put Aleinu in different places, but ideally Aleinu is the last thing, I mean, like here, it's the last thing that you say, and that's kind of the seal that incorporates within me whatever Kedusha I've gained from the tefillah as I go out to face that cruel world out there. So Aleinu simply internalizes all that you gained from tefillah, all that we gained from tefillah, hopefully, and we come back into the world. That's why Aleinu is Badafka, the last thing. Aleinu is not connected to a particular world. I'm already in the world of Asiya after Ketores and Ein Kelokeinu. Aleinu now prepares me spiritually how to encounter that world of Asiya, with all of the nisyonos that the world of Asiya has. One has to understand that although it seems on some level that you're going down in levels, because I go all the way up to Asilas, like a roller coaster, and now I go all the way down to Asiya, but no, because the ultimate goal of Kedusha is to take the holiness and bring it into the lower world. So I could remind you of the Tanya's famous statement that if you've ever had any shachas with Chabad, you have heard at least a million times, if not more, but it's from the Tanya. Actually, it's a lashon of a medrash in Chazal, but the Baal HaTanya made the medrash very, very famous, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was nisaveh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a deep yearning to have a dira b'tachtainim, a dwelling place in this lower world, meaning it's specifically God's greatest nachas, God's greatest joy, that his dwelling place should be where there's the greatest darkness and the greatest hesed. So it might be great for you that you're in the world of Atzilus, you know, connected to Hashem at that highest level. But the real goal is to come back to this world of physicality, this world of Gashmias, this world of Hester Panim, of concealment, this world of darkness, and bring light, bring the light of Hashem into this world. And that's what... Right, that's exactly it. So therefore, Aleinu is kind of the mission statement. Now that I'm in the world of Asiya, what is my mission? What is my tachlis? What is my goal? To bring Hashem into the world and have him proclaimed as the king of the world. Yeah.
The way Aleinu is put in the Ashkenazi,
it comes before the Shir Shalyam. That's correct. So I have to say, once again, since the explanation I gave you is Kabbalistic based on the Arizal, in the Siddur of the Arizal, Aleinu is at the end. You have to, according to the Ashkenazim, it's not entirely clear. Yeah, according to Ashkenazic Ashkenazim. But you know, the Minhag of Eretz Yisrael, no, I'm sorry, here in Or Samech we say Shir Shalyam after. After Aleinu, okay, but in a lot of places they do it the other way. So I'll pee the Ari. Yes, Svardim do Aleinu at the end, at the very, very end. Yeah. That's the I'll pee the Arizal. Aleinu is said at the very end of everything. Okay, so that's a little bit of a general perspective regarding Tefillah, which is literally a sulam. It is a ladder that goes up to Shemayim, and the Malachei Elokim, just like Yaakov's ladder, the angels of God. Olim v'yordim, they go up and they go down, and that's what we do as well. We go up, but then from what we get when we go up, we have to bring it down. Yeah.
Before the Ari, what was the
minhag? There were two minhagim. The Ari did not create the minhag of Aleinu at the end. There were Sfardim before the Arizal, and this was the minhag. But the Ari said, "Al pi Kabbalah, this was the appropriate thing to do." Obviously, this doesn't change the overall structure. It just changes how you characterize Aleinu. I mean, we still have the idea of the four worlds. We still have the idea of the four parts of the Temple Mount. We have the Har HaBayis, and we have the courtyard, and we have the Heichal, and we have the Kodesh HaKodashim. That structure still fits. The only question is, you know, where do you put Aleinu within that overall structure? Okay. So now, anyway, be as it may, the first Tehillim of Pesukei Dezimra, as opposed to Hodu, is Mizmor Kuf, Mizmor 100, which, by the way, many Sfardim say in Kabbalah Shabbos itself, which Ashkenazim do not say. But this is called Mizmor Lesoda, a song of thanksgiving, song of thanksgiving. Now, there is a big, big machlokas among the Meforshim. What does Toda or Soda mean in this context? Does it mean thanksgiving, or does it mean a korban toda? In other words, we know that there's a special korban in the Torah that a person brings when they have been saved by Hashem. It's called a thanksgiving offering. So in biblical Hebrew, when we talk about toda, it's not always clear, are we referring to thanksgiving in general, or are we referring very specifically to the korban toda? Now you'll see this has halachic ramifications. Meaning, does Mizmor Lesoda mean a generic song of gratitude? Or does it mean the specific song that was sung by the Levian when the Korban Todah was brought? Right? In other words, was this sung by the Levian? Now, Rashi learns in Tehillim that Mizmor Lasoda actually means this was the Shira, that when you brought a Korban Todah, and with that Korban Todah there was a wine libation, when the wine was poured, the Levium would sing. Again, we don't have the tunes of the Levium, but they would sing Mizmor Lasoda. So according to Rashi, it is the Shir for the Korban Todah. Again, you'll see that this will be far from semantic. The Radak argues. In fact, some say there was no shear for the Korban Todah because Levium shear is only for communal offerings, like the Korban Tomid. But big machlokas, who says there was a shear when private people brought korbanos? The Avni Nezer writes, there was no shear when private people brought korbanos. The shear is the Tomid and the Musaf. Now, the Radak doesn't address the halachic point, but I will tell you that the Radak understands Mizmor Lasoda does not mean the shear of a Korban Todah. It just means a song of thanksgiving. Now, why is this important? It's actually important regarding when do you say or not say Mizmor Lasoda. We paskin, la halacha, that we do not say Mizmor Lasoda on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. Chol Hamoed, we said, and we don't say it on Pesach at all, and we don't even say it Erev Pesach. Now, why is that so? That's correct. Because why don't you bring the Korban Todah? So like this. On Yom Tov generally, let's say Sukkot, on Yom Tov generally, you never bring private offerings because it's Malach. Shabbos and Yom Tov, you don't bring a Korban Todah. It's a Korban Yachid. A Korban Yachid is not Docha, Shabbos or Yom Tov. Okay, that's a general rule. Pesach, with the Korban Todah, in addition, which was an animal offering, the person who was bringing a Thanksgiving offering had to bring 40 loaves of bread. 40 loaves of bread of four different types, 10 of each different type. 30 of them were different types of matzah that were prepared in different ways, unleavened bread. 10 of them were chametz. So 10 out of the 40 were chametz. This is very rare, because normally a meal offering in the Beis HaMikdash the whole year is never chametz, but the Korban Todah was chametz. We'll talk about why. Now, since you're not allowed to have chametz on Pesach, and not only that, but you're not allowed to have chametz even Erev Pesach, after 4 hours in the morning, so the halacha is you're not allowed to bring a Korban Todah on Erev Pesach or Pesach. Therefore, according to Rashi that says, this was the song of the Korban Todah, we would not recite it on Yom Tov. We would not recite it on Pesach, even Chol HaMoed, and we would not recite it on Erev Pesach. And indeed, that is the halacha. Masha Ein Kein, according to the Radak, that this was not a song that was connected to a Korban Todah. It was simply a song of thanksgiving to Hashem. Well, you can thank Hashem all the time. Shabbos, Yom Tov, Pesach. So there actually is a machlokas minhagim. There were some minhagim that did say Mizmor Lasoda on Yom Tov and on Pesach. And I mentioned that many Sephardim say it in Kabbalah Shabbos, Friday night. But the minhag of Ashkenazim certainly is in accordance with Rashi's Pesach. In fact, Rashi is a tshuva. You see, it's very interesting. In Rashi's commentary on Tehillim, he just says Mizmor Lasoda means a song connected to the Korban Todah. That's all he says here. But we have a tshuva from Rashi. Rashi wrote responsa. People don't realize this. Rashi is so known for his commentaries. He also wrote. He was a great posek. Although it's interesting, in the Gemara, he doesn't tend to paskin. He just explains the Shaka Bataria, but he was one of the great, great poskim of his generation, as you would imagine. He was so immensely great that Rashi wrote a tshuva that we don't say Mizmor Lasoda on Shabbos, Yom Tov, Pesach, or Erev Pesach, because you don't bring a Korban Todah on those days because of the Lachmi Todah. So consequently, therefore, what's interesting is that the machlokes of if Todah means Korban Todah or Todah means Thanksgiving has mamash halachic ramifications as to when you say or don't say Mizmor L'Soda. Okay, now, yeah.
I just want to say a score of why he didn't ask him, because the acceptance of Rashi is the pshat. If people give a psak and there's other poskim, they'd start arguing, then they destroy his whole pshat. They would just stuck with the acceptance.
It's true. But as they say, Rashi is not as well known as a posek, but he was a very great posek, as was his grandson, Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam was an enormously important posek. In fact, the Rivash writes in a tshuva that he writes about how great Rabbeinu Tam was. He says he felt Rabbeinu Tam was greater than the Rambam. And then he writes with a lot of reluctance, and perhaps, he writes, perhaps greater than the grandfather. But he didn't want to, you know. The grandfather is Rashi. He says that's how great Rabbeinu Tam, the Rivash felt Rabbeinu Tam was. But okay. Yeah.
The
Zaydi
would have
Nachas. Yeah, well, we say, right, everyone is jealous except for Naivet Amidai. And Rashi was obviously greater than
Rambam.
Yes, that was correct. The Rivash didn't hold that way as well. Okay. All righty, so that's the machlokas of Mizmor L'Soda. Now, whether or not this is Korban Todah or Todah in general, obviously, this highlights the importance of gratitude in Judaism. So here I'll just make a general comment. And I've mentioned this before, so forgive me for repeating. That, you know, in the southern United States, the word Jew is sometimes used in a slang way to cheat people in business. So if you're in Alabama...
Northern
part two. Okay. So they may say to you, don't Jew around with me, even if you're not Jewish. They may say, don't Jew around me, don't cheat me, don't drive a hard bargain.
I grew up in the Lubbock, Alabama, and I didn't hear that. Yeah.
Okay, Baruch Hashem, so you must have lived in the era of civil rights and the like. Yeah?
I didn't hear it as cheating, but as driving a bargain.
Or driving a hard bargain.
Like Avraham Avinu.
Yeah. Avraham Avinu was on the other side of it. He wasn't driving a hard bargain. I mean, Ephron was driving a bargain with Avram.
No, I mean,
Oh, with Sodom, okay.
Right.
Yeah. So this was in the American Heritage Dictionary as a slang usage for Jew, and people were complaining about it and saying, oh, what are you putting in slurs? But Lemaisa, dictionary is a dictionary. I would like to know. If someone calls me a name, whatever it is, I would like to know what they meant by it. You know, so it doesn't bother me that it's in the dictionary itself. But if to Jew somebody can be termed a verb, what it really means is to be thankful, to be grateful to somebody, because that is the actual meaning of Yehudi. We know, of course, Yehuda was Leah's fourth son, the fourth tribe. And the Torah says, why did Leah call her son Yehuda? Because the Torah says, she said with son number four, Hapam Oda Es Hashem. Now I am grateful to Hashem. Hoda'ah, gratitude. Rashi explains, why was she grateful with son number four more than the first three? So Rashi explains, based on a medrash, that she knew with Ruach HaKodesh there would be 12 tribes. She knew that. And she knows there are four women from whom the 12 tribes shall issue. Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah. So 12 divided by 4 is 3. So each one of the women is entitled to 3. So when you get what you think you're entitled to get, you're not grateful. But when she had number 4, she wound up having 6. But when she had number 4, she said, Hashem has given me more than I'm entitled to. That equals gratitude. Gratitude is a sense I'm getting more than I deserve, more than my entitlement. Now, that's Rashi. Says the Sfas Emes, every Jew is called Yehudi, even if we're not from the tribe of Yehuda. Because we have to go through life with the sense that Hashem has given us more than we are entitled to, in terms of chesed, of appreciating what Hashem has given us, not looking at what we don't have. And again, let me just remind you, the Sfas Emes was writing against a backdrop, this was late 19th century Poland of extreme Baruch Hashem, was before the Holocaust, but extreme anti-Semitism, extreme persecution, extreme poverty. Jews in Poland had virtually nothing at all. And yet, he said that the ultimate ethic of a Jew is to feel Hashem's kindness all the time, and to feel that Hashem has given me more kindness than I am entitled to. And therefore, the very translation, it's an important thing, the very translation of a Yehudi is a grateful, thankful person. That is the Midah of Hakaras HaTov, and that's why Mizmor Lesod is so important. In fact, that's why it's in Psukei Dezimra. See, if it would just be a Korban Todah thing, we would put it in Korbanos. But Psukei Dezimra is about the gratitude to Hashem, and therefore Mizmor Lesod. We actually begin the Tehillim of Psukei Dezimra with a song of thanksgiving. This is Rabbi Victor Miller, Zichrono Livracha. He had a few themes, but I think Hakaras HaTov may have been perhaps the theme that he talked about most in, like, what, 60 years, 70 years of teaching. I don't know, he taught for decades and decades and decades. And he has a lot of, in fact, I remember back when I was in like ninth grade, I came across his description of what you should think about when you eat an apple or a banana. That's kind of a classic. I cannot do it justice, but there's like a 20-page meditation about color and taste and texture and acidity and sweetness and how you try to notice everything to be makir tov. He talked about the fact that when you raise your children, one of the things you try to raise them with is a sense of being happy at everything that happens in life. So even things like it's raining outside. So, you know, one attitude, oh, it's raining again, you know. He says, no, you know, but that kind of rubs off on the children. They kind of absorb that negative attitude towards things. You know, we say, oh, it's too hot, oh, it's too cold, oh, it's too wet, oh, it's too dry. You could flip everything around the other way. You know, Baruch Hashem, you know, the rain is coming down. And even if it sounds like it's a little bit of a fake sometimes, because you know, you may not be naturally ebullient or naturally cheerful, but as Chazal say, Adam nifal kafi pulosav, our emotions kind of come from the actions that we do. We behave a certain way, even if it's kind of artificial. I'm not really feeling that. At some point, you know, the actions educate the mind and educate the heart as well. And certainly it's a wonderful example for children. I mean, you see when children when children grow up and they talk about their parents in good ways, sometimes almost the most fondest memory the child has is how optimistic and hopeful a parent was, that when things were difficult, they saw the bright side of things. And that comes from Hakaras HaTov, and that comes from Emuna, and that comes from Bitachon. That, you know, life might be difficult, but ultimately it's a great gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. Now, in the very first pasuk, Baruch Hashem, we only have five psukim, so it won't be that difficult to go through. Hareel Hashem kol haaretz. Shout out joyously to Hashem, the whole world. So the Netziv points out, actually, that it's interesting that the Korban Todah, you know, you're giving thanks to God for something. Let's talk about the Korban Todah again. The Korban Todah almost forces you to make a party. Number one, you got to bring a whole animal. Okay, an animal's a big thing, a cow. Number two, you got to bring 40 loaves of bread, 30 matzahs, 10 chametz. Number three, it got to be consumed in a day and a night before midnight. So if you bring your korban, unlike a shlamim that has 2 days, a korban todah is only a day and a night. Now that means, what does that mean practically? If you brought your korban todah 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday, everything has to be finished no later than midnight of that night. Otherwise it becomes nosar. It's a big avera to leave something over, and it would have to be burnt and destroyed, and you're not allowed to leave it over. So what am I supposed to do? I got 40 loaves of bread to consume, and I got a cow that has to be eaten up. What do I do? How do I do it?
You need a lot of friends.
Answer, I bring a lot of friends. That's exactly right. And then it says that that's the whole idea, that when you want to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a rov am. You make a sudas hodah. It's a whole meal, and that way you're mafarsing, you publicize the gratitude that you have for Hashem.
Which meal night do you have to finish by? From the afternoon to 12 o'clock at night?
Yom v'layla, not shnei yomim. If it would be a regular shlamim. A toda actually is a shlamim. It's brought the same way as a shlamim, except it has the bread. But a regular shlamim has 2 days and a middle night in between. The korban toda is only 1 day and that night. Doraisa, it could be until Amud HaShachar, but midrabanan, it has to be chatzais.
Oh, so it's less than 24 hours?
It is less than 24 hours. Yeah, absolutely less than 24 hours. Because you can't bring it till the morning, and you have to finish it before midnight. Now, doraisa, it could be up to 24 hours, because if you bring it at the very first part of the day, you have until the... Yeah. But that's the first mission in Brachos, that Cholin Echolin L'yayim Echad Mitzvah Sinat She'yalam Mud HaShachar, but the Chachamim said the Drabanan has to be by Chatzais. Okay, so the Netziv makes the point that the whole Aveda of Korban Tamid is that you want to be Mefarsim. That is why Bizman said when you bench Gomel. Gomel is a prayer of thanksgiving if you were recovering from a sickness, right? We looked at that in Kuf Zayin, Tehillim 107. You know, you went on a voyage, a hazardous voyage, illness, prison, right? Got lost, whatever, in the desert, whatever it would be. So what's a woman after childbirth? So what is the halacha? You have to bench Gomel in front of a minyan. You cannot bench Gomel by yourself, because once again, the whole idea of gratitude is it should be a public thing, because the whole Korban Taida forces you to go public, so to speak. You have to go public because you got to finish all this stuff. You got to have a party. So that's the Hariyu Lashem Kol Haaretz. Now we then come to Pasuk Beis, made famous by Breslov, other people as well. That's a little different. Rav Nachman said Mitzvah Gedayla Liyos B'Simcha, but there's an earlier version of this, which is David HaMelech's version. Ivdu Es Hashem B'Simcha, also set to Negunim. Serve Hashem with joy. Ivdu Es Hashem B'Simcha. And here, Rav Chaim Vital brings, in the name of the Ari, that the Arizal told him that whatever madregos he achieved in understanding Hashem, in Ruach HaKodesh, in whatever the madregos, all came from the fact that he had a tremendous joy and a tremendous simcha in his Avodas Hashem.
This was what the madrega that Chaim Vital reached, or that madrega
the Arizal told Rav Chaim Vital, that whatever madregos the Arizal reached was only a result of his simcha in Avodas Hashem, and one who does mitzvos without simcha will never reach the highest levels that they were able. And the Arizal offers an interpretation of a pasuk in the Chumash. Now, this interpretation is so familiar that you might think it's Pashat Pshat. I'm going to tell you it, and then I'm going to show you why it actually is not Pashat Pshat, even though you're going to assume it's Pashat Pshat. It says in the Teichacha in Devarim that why is Hashem punishing us? So it says the following: Tachas lo yavadata es Hashem eleikecha besimcha uvetuv leivav meirov kol. Because you did not serve God with joy and a glad heart because of the abundance that you had. Now, let me explain what the Pashat Pshat is. The Pashat Pshat is probably the Pshat you didn't hear. And that is, it's condemning the Jewish people because when you didn't serve God, you did so joyously. Meaning it's condemning the person who sins and gets pleasure in his sinning. So the Pashat is, you didn't serve God, and you didn't serve God with joy and happiness. So what it's condemning is, according to the Pashat Pshat, I'll get to the Ari in a moment, what it's saying is, if you sinned because you had a Yetzer Hara, but at least you were sad over it, that's one level. But to sin and enjoy it and be happy, that's much less forgivable. That's the Pashat Pshat. But the Arizal learns differently. Lo yavada Hashem Elokecha b'simcha means you didn't serve God with joy. You served God, but you didn't do it b'simcha. It's the opposite, meaning instead of saying you didn't serve God and you had joy when you didn't serve God, the Arizal learns the pasuk is making the opposite point. Even though you served God, but you didn't serve God with simcha. And Meirov Kol, the Arizal interprets to mean, and the simcha has to be Meirov Kol, more than any other pleasure you have in the world. That if you don't serve God with a simcha that is greater than any other pleasure, you fall within the condemnation of that pasuk. And we know that the simcha in avodas Hashem is very important. We know this even in terms of simple psychology. When a person is besimcha, their mind is open, their heart is open, they are receptive to learning things, to understanding things, to feeling things. When they are sad and depressed, there is what is called in Chassidus and Kabbalah, katnus hamochin, a shrinking of the mind, so to speak. We're literally constricted. We're unable to absorb things. And therefore, simcha in avodas Hashem is a great thing. Now, Rav Nachman's statement, mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid, there's a mitzvah to always be besimcha. Okay, one could argue about that as a technical matter. Even the Alter Rebbe, you talked in Tanya, you talked a lot about simcha, said that you set aside certain times of the day to cry and to mourn, but that should only be certain times of the day. But overall, one should have an attitude of great simcha in avodas Hashem. Yeah.
I feel like that is something that if you've grown up from, and this really is learning Torah and discussing Torah really is the greatest pleasure you've ever had. This is something in the Kabbalah, but for someone who's a Baal Tshuva and came from a mamish hedonistic lifestyle, I can say that day to day I am much happier, but in terms of the highest highs...
Okay, so this needs a little more explanation than I'm giving it. In other words, when I say, okay, what do we mean with the word simcha? What is simcha? So simcha doesn't have to be kind of an emotional high, like, you know, a bipolar person, you know, swings. We don't mean it has to be some mood swing where you're dancing on the table. Simcha can be a very quiet idea of simply feeling I'm doing good things and I'm happy in what I'm doing. You might call it contentment, maybe. Maybe joy. Joy in English maybe has a more powerful exhibitionistic behavior than maybe simcha. Right, so we're not talking about necessarily you have to be, hi, how are you doing? Look, Yaakov Kamenetsky, Yaakov Kamenetsky remarks that when he was, you know, when he was a bacher and he first came to Slobodka, so he encountered some Navardikers who were very, very extreme in their mussar, and they taught they have to greet everybody with a friendly countenance. So he gets off the train, and all of a sudden he's surrounded by these people who are like overwhelming him. How are you? Shalom Aleichem, Ben Torah, Baruch Hashem, how are you? And you know, he didn't like it. He says he was uncomfortable. He felt invaded. somebody goes, how are you? Ben Torah, Baruch Hashem. You know, so that type of simcha is sometimes inappropriate. I'm not going to put it down. It represents a good midah too. But you might call the Litvische simcha is a more restrained type of simcha. But it's still a great simcha. It's still a great simcha.
What do you think the Arizal meant?
It's hard for us to know, because it's funny, as voluminous as Rav Chaim Vital's writings are about the Ari, we don't get such a personal glimpse. You know, it's not so personal. I mean, you have stories of the Arizal doing miracles and this and that, but like, you know, was the Ari Lebedik? Was he like dancing like a Breslover? Was the Ari like the Vilna Gaon, more sedate? We don't really have such a personalized view here. But all I can say is that, generally speaking, simcha is a panemius more than a chitzainius. Now, of course, it is true. Chitzainius, externalities, can have an impact on your panemius. But the essence of simcha is panemius more than chitzainius. And then we've met people like that. You meet people that what the expression in English is, they radiate an inner joy. They're not necessarily that demonstrative, but there's kind of an inner simcha in them. So I think that's what we're talking about. And that, hopefully, Baal Tshuva can find. If anything, I might even say, Baal Tshuva might have an easier point, because it's new, it's exciting, it's such a change, hopefully it's such an improvement over a prior life. I mean, the problem with people who are born from is that, you know, like anything else, it can become just habitual, rote, and then it's much harder to have simcha, right? So in some ways, when something is new to you, there might be a greater simcha.
So you don't think that if someone really reflects and says that the highest levels of pleasure I've ever been are actually not learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, that you're over on what the Arizal is saying, that even if you served God, that you're still going to get the tochacha if you didn't have it in the greatest
that's what the Arizal says. I mean, that's a very high standard, and that's a standard we work towards. And then we're back to the idea that if a person truly tries to reach a certain level, even if he's not able to, Hashem gives him the credit as if he reached it. I mean, that's also a principle that's important, that we try to work on the idea of simcha.
The simcha that comes from a sense of novelty is different from the simcha that comes from a sense of depth and connection.
Yeah, that's very true. The simcha of novelty is just novel, and it can pass, and it does pass, and it's artificial. That's very, very true. But once again, one modality can lead to the other modality. You know, you reach a certain level of simcha, then you can transfer it. Yeah.
Remember you said that simcha comes through a person feeling accomplished and achieved.
Feeling that you're in the right place, you're doing the right thing, that your life is worthy, that you're building something, you're building a connection. That's why you'll find often with people, lahavdil, I'm going to use a secular example. People who become very, very successful in business, and they built the business from scratch, and now they just sit back and, you know, the millions roll in. They'll often say that the happiest moments of their lives were when they were in the garage, you know, trying to make things work and trying to make a payroll, because they felt they were building something. As opposed to the idea of feeling you've arrived, at that point, like, what is there, you know? So in Avodas Hashem, Baruch Hashem, the problem is, not the problem, the opportunity is you're always building something, no matter how high you are, there's more to accomplish, more to do. So when a person feels they're growing, they're not stagnant, that's a tremendous simcha, you know? Think about a child. I mean, we're hardwired. The Eivishter, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, put into our nature the desire to grow, the desire to explore, the desire to learn. I mean, look at a baby. You know, the baby naturally wants to learn, wants to see, wants to look, wants to reach. That's what Hashem put in. What happens sometimes is that we lose that, or at least sometimes, some people sometimes lose that as we get older. But that nature is still there, the nature to grow, the nature to expand, to learn, to take in things, you know? So that gives a person simcha, you know, you're just taking in things, learning things, growing, yeah.
You mentioned this here, but the Orcha Sadiqim, the Shar Simcha, starts off many pages on Bitochon, or leads to Amuna, maybe, and Chobos Chobos says Amuna leads to Bitochon, but if you have, why is the Arizal so, because he's walking with Hashem. If Hashem's with you, you'll always have.
Yeah.
So the simcha would come. There's a very powerful statement many years ago. You may want to check it out with his talmidim, his sons here. Of Chaim Zimmerman said, a mitzvah done without simcha is not a mitzvah.
I don't want to say this lahalacha, because somebody went to the Chafetz Chaim and said, I have a problem. I'm learning Torah without enthusiasm. So the Chafetz Chaim said, well, I guess you have to learn without enthusiasm for a while. You know? And in fact, exactly what you said, though, I heard a pshat once from a fellow from England. Ibdu es Hashem b'simcha can be interpreted to mean, when you're serving Hashem, then you have real simcha. Meaning, Ibdu es Hashem, it's the aveda that gives you the simcha. Instead of saying, serve Hashem with joy, it's like, Ibdu es Hashem, when you serve Hashem, you have simcha. But here, I want to share with you a very deep and a bit complicated drush of the Alter Rebbe. It's not in the Tanya, it's in the Kirtei Torah, his drushes. That is, let's look at the whole verse. Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, serve Hashem with joy, bo'o lefanav, come before him, birinana. Birinana is joyous singing. So the Alter Rebbe starts off quoting a Zohar that simcha is connected to day, and rinana or rina, which he's using interchangeably, is connected to night. Simcha is what you have days, rinana is what you have at night, and he makes this point. Now that's why, for example, you say Shabbos Mincha, it says Avraham Yogel. Avram rejoices, because Yogel is a different word, but it's connected to Simcha. Avram is connected to Shachris, which is the morning prayer. So Avram has Gila, which is Simcha. Yitzchak Yiraneh. Yitzchak that is connected to the Mincha prayer towards night is Rina. And here's what the Alter Rebbe says. The Alter Rebbe says that Rina is when a person first emerges out of the night of suffering, adversity, and concealment, and you come out of the darkness and you experience great light. On one hand, that's tremendously joyous. That's tremendously joyous. But there is a sense of disorientation and confusion. Right? Just like a person comes out of total darkness and now it's a bright light, you know, they can't focus for a while. They're disoriented. You know, there were Jews who were freed from the concentration camps, and they were finally given regular food after months and years, in some cases, of being on starvation diets. And they ate ravenously, and some people died from that. They were overwhelmed by the goodness that was given to them. They didn't know how to take it in. So, Rina, is the emergence from darkness into light, in which there's a certain, maybe sadness is not the right word, but the joy is not yet complete because you're still confused and disoriented. And then, and therefore that is called, the Baal HaTanya writes, that is called arevus. Arevus means it's pleasant, but there's a certain bitterness to it. And then, when you now become ready to be makabel, that is called mesikos. That is called sweetness. So the Alter Rebbe says the following. The way he interprets Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, he says in a very interesting way that when you come to Shemona Esrei, which is called Avodah, Avodah Shebelev, the service of the heart, you should be b'simcha. But in Psukei DeZimra and in Psukei DeZimra, where you're emerging from the darkness of physicality, right? You're beginning to enter the Beis HaMikdash, you have Birnana. So look how the Pasuk reads. Ivdu es Hashem, when you're finally doing the Avaida in the Beis HaMikdash or the Tefillah, you have Simcha. Bo'ol Lefanav, but the process of coming towards God, Psukei DeZimra, etc., you're Renana, because you're emerging out of the darkness and confusion and disorientation. And therefore, the bowl, the fun of Birnana, is the precursor. If you come before God with Renana, you will then progress to the Madrega of Simcha. In fact, he points out, I don't know what the Makar is, the Baal HaTanya writes that the songs of the Levium, we don't have the music. People say, I heard this years ago, but I don't think there's any source of this at all, that the Gregorian chants, which are very, very, very old, very, very old, may have had their origin all the way back to the Beis HaMikdash, the tunes that the Levium used. The truth is, we don't have any record, you know, we really don't have a record of it. Even though Tehillim does have Tamim, Tehillim has a trup, but there are two problems with the trup of Tehillim. Number one, the trup of Tehillim is not necessarily the music that the Levium used in the Beis HaMikdash. Number two, we don't even have a clear Messiah how to sing the Trup of Tehillim. The Trup of Tehillim of three books of Tanakh, Taimei Emes, the Trup of Emes. Emes is Iyuv, Mishlei Tehillim, are not sung the same way. as the other Nevi'im, Sifrei Nevi'im or Kesuvim. We don't have an accurate Messiah. Some groups, Taimonim, claim to have an accurate Messiah, but that's not at all clear either way. So because of this, we literally do not know what the music in the Beis HaMikdash sounded like. In fact, Bechlau, ancient music, Bechlau, he didn't have the notation systems. So it's very hard to reconstruct any type of ancient music. Nevertheless, the Bala Tanya writes, I assume he has some source, that the songs of the Levium were like plaintive, yearning melodies. They were not like fast lebedik neguni. And he says, because the Levium's Aveda is to bring us up from the darkness to the light. Therefore, their inyan is renana, their inyan is rina, and then the Aveda could be done besimcha. And when you're going from darkness to light, there's not a sadness there, but there's the idea of it is so unfamiliar, it is so disorienting, it is confusing, therefore there's a certain... And I would also say maybe there's even an element of sadness because you're leaving the familiar. You know, even an existence that is very, very substandard, if you get used to it, to face something new is hard. Right? So that's a beautiful kind of complicated drash. And if du es Hashem besimcha, bo'u lefana bernana. Now, as an aside, the Alter Rebbe makes another observation. He just has a throwaway line, which is actually very, very fascinating. And I don't even know if it's true, but this is what he says. He says that the Edomites, the Romans, they loved happy music. And the Ishmaelites, the Arabs, love kind of slow, yearning music. He says, why is that so? Listen to what he says. He says, because Edom represents the koach of gevura, strict judgment. And therefore they get pleasure in experiencing the opposite. Happy music, gentle music, etc. Yishmael is connected to chesed. And therefore they get pleasure with gevura, you know, strict music and the like. Because he says, a person tends to get pleasure... If it's non-spiritual, they get pleasure from things that are different than their routine. And therefore, Yishmael, which is connected to Chesed, loves things that are sad. And Edom, that's connected to Gevura, loves things that are happy. It's all the opposite. Okay, I have no idea if that's true. But this is what he says about the Shiras HaLevim.
So he said that all the songs of the Levim were slow and sad?
That's what he says. He says because the Levim's Aveda...
Slow and sad?
Not sad, but they were slow. They were. It's not sadness. It's a yearning, kind of a yearning type of music. We sometimes call that sad, but it's lavdavka. It's the type of music that is often sung by Suda Shlishis, right? When we're about to leave Shabbos. So often, although I hear in Arts America they sometimes go fast there too, but often for Suda Shlishis, the dominant mode is kind of a slow, yearning, think Mizmor LeDavid, right? The famous Mizmor LeDavid, right? Kind of slow. Yedid Nefesh. These are songs of yearning, songs of longing. They're not like, you know, fast music.
Not sad.
Well, there's a sadness in the sense that you're about to leave Shabbos. So there is a certain element of sadness there, too. A song of yearning is a song of sadness too, because and the level that yearning expresses the fact that I am still far from Hashem, and I want to become near. I want to draw near. So in yearning, there's a certain element of joy and sadness at the same time. Joy that I try to approach my beloved, but sadness I'm not quite there yet. Right. So there is sad. We'll call it yearning and more than sadness. Yeah.
How did the Alter Rebbe figure that the Ishmaelites are naturally happy, besimcha people? I'm just Joe Schmo, but that doesn't really.
Yeah,
seem
yeah. He's
to
not.
Either.
He's not describing. See, he's not describing. Okay, this is really based on Kabbalah, and that is he's not describing external personalities. He's describing like spiritual shorish. That remember that according to Kabbalah, Yishmael incorporated the trait of Avraham. Avraham represented loving kindness. Now, Yishmael perverted the kindness in many, many ways, but that's why to this very day, An Arab will not stab you in the back as long as you're in his house. He will stab you only when you walk out of the door. There is kind of a distorted notion of loving kindness, even Bizman Azab, as opposed to Esav, which represents the Gevurah, the inner strength of Yitzchak, which again got perverted to cruelty. So how this plays out today, it's a little difficult because now the nations are mixed and identities are mixed. But in terms of the pure prototype, Yishmael is mechuber to Chesed, and Esav is mechuber to Din. So that's the Baal HaTanya's drash on Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, bo lefanav birnana. Now, one other thing, I want to go backwards a little bit and give you some interesting gematrias. Go back to the first pasuk. Hariu Hashem kol haaretz. Sing to Hashem, the whole land. Everyone should sing. So the Mefarshim point out, the Chidah points out, that look at the Rashi Tevas of these four words. Hariu Hashem kol haaretz. Hey lamed chaf hey. It spells halacha. And that's a reminder that the greatest, greatest joy you can experience is when you learn Torah and you're able to derive practical and tangible conclusions from your Torah learning. It's not so much, again, note what I'm saying. It's not so much stam learning halacha that gives you the joy. It's learning all of the depth of a sugya and being able to derive from the sugya. It's a very hard thing to derive. This is called in the Gemara Lasuke Shmaisa Aliba Dehilkasa, to be able to extract from all of the complicated structure of a sugya the actual halacha lemaisa. That's very different than just learning the halacha lemaisa. You actually extract it from Rashi and Tosfos and the Rambam and the different opinions of the Mefarshim and in the Gemara, and you finally come, like the Chazon Ish, for example, literally was able, the Rambam did it, of course, but the Chazon Ish in modern times takes every sugya and shas, every sugya, kodshim, taros, every single thing in the Torah, and comes up with a final halacha on it. It's an amazing thing to have such a depth of Torah knowledge that you come. So therefore, halacha is Hariu Hashem Kol Haaretz. And indeed, although I don't necessarily go with all of these rushes, but you know, sometimes we darshan Rashi Tevos, the first letter of the words, and sometimes we darshan Sof Tevos, the end letters of the words. So look at the end letters, going from the last word, Tzadik, Hey. I'm sorry, Tzadik, Lamed, Hey, Vav. Well, if you switch the order, Tzadik, Hey, Lamed, Vav, Sahalu means rejoice. Right? So the Rosh Tevos are Halacha, the Sof Tevos are Sahalu. Rejoice. And just to add a little frosting on this cake, the Gematria of Sahalu is 131. And that is the same gematria as anava, humility, which is 131, meaning the way you reach the joy of being able to pasken halacha is with the quality of anava, of humility. Right? We know that the Torah, Chazal tell us that one of the many, many reasons why Torah is compared to water is just as water goes from high ground to low ground, the Torah leaves the arrogant and it remains with the humble. So this is, I don't do it too often, but this is Rosh Tevos and Sofei Tevos and a common gematria with Hanava, and you read the Haril Hashem Kol Haaretz. Okay.
You're saying that this is halacha.
Yep.
We have the phrase Ein Ashkina Sholem Tov Simcha Shal Mitzvah.
Yep.
So the halacha, and you're doing the mitzvah, you're following
right,
the mitzvah.
Right. That's correct. Now, the next pasuk is also going to be very interesting. Do you know Ki Hashem Hu Elokim? Now this phrase, Hashem Hu Elokim,
this is
Pasuk Gimel. Gimel now, Pasuk Gimel. Hashem Hu Elokim, remember at the end of Yom Kippur, actually, we don't. It's not from here, but from elsewhere. We say seven times, Hashem Hu Ha Elokim. It's not exactly this. It's from a different place. Hashem Hu Elokim. Hashem is Elokim. We say it seven times. What is the meaning of Hashem Hu Elokim? What does it mean? God is God. You're just repeating it. God is God. So the simple meaning is this. We know that Hashem Yudkei Vavkei is the name of Hashem that we use for the Midah of Rachamim. Elokim is the name that connotes the name of punishment or din or gevura or the laws of nature. In fact, Elokim is not only punishment. Elokim is the same gematria as Hateva, nature. So when God enables the world to run in accordance with the normal operations of nature, that is called Elokim also. Right? Yudke Vavke is Rachamim, Elokim is Gevura, Din, and the like. So, here is the thing. What does the last Mishnah in Brachos say? The last Mishnah in Brachos tells us, Chayav Adam Levarech Al Hara, Kederech Shumavarech Al Tova. You must bless Hashem for the bad things that happen, the same way you bless him for the good things. Now the Gemara explains that doesn't mean you make the same bracha. For good tidings, I make the bracha Shachiyanu, or Atova Ametev. For God forbid, tragic things, I make a bracha Dayanu Emes. It's not the same bracha. Judaism recognizes that we have different emotional reactions, right, to a simcha and to a tragedy. But in both, you have to accept it with an inner joy that this comes from Hashem and it is ultimately for the good. Which means, even those aspects of Hashem that are perceived of as Elokim, coming from punishment or concealment, are ultimately expressions of mercy to bring out qualities within me. That's the meaning of what we say at the end of Yom Kippur. Hashem Hu Elokim. The Elokim that sometimes punishes, and the Elokim that sometimes rejects, and the Elokim that sometimes conceals, is ultimately Hashem. Yudke Vavke. And that's how you get gratitude. You see, it's connected. Du'u, know, ki Hashem Hu Elokim. Even when in your life you seem to be experiencing Elokim, rejection, punishment, gevura, know that it's coming out of love, it's coming out of concern, it's coming out of a way to make me a better person, make me a stronger person, bring out kochot in me that I otherwise wouldn't have had. And that is how you are grateful. That's how you're grateful in life, by knowing that the Elokim that you think you encounter is ultimately the Yudke Vavke of Rachamim. Right? That's the Uki Hashemu Elokim. Now then, you'll notice, Hu Asanu, He is the one that made us. Now here, we have a very interesting Kisiv and Kri. What is Kisiv and Kri?
Dalet.
Again? This is Pasuk Gimel. We're still in Pasuk Gimel.
But it was recognized that He's Hashem who made us?
Yes, that's the same Pasuk. That's Pasuk Gimel. What is a Ksiv and a Kri? You have this in the Torah too. Sometimes words are written a certain way. They are written a certain way, but they are to be read a different way. This was a tradition that Hashem gave to Moshe B'Sinai, that words are written, most of the time they're the same. And if you recall from Maseches Sukkah, there's even a machlokas when Chazal make drushos, should drushos be based on the way the word is written, or should drushos be based on the way the word is read? Now, in Pasuk Gimel, we have an example of the word that is written one way and read another way, but it's a little more difficult here because the pronunciation is going to be identical. The word low. Lo. What does lo mean? So it depends how you spell it. Lo with an aleph means no. Right? Lo. Lo with a vav means to him. Right? Lo. Zeh shayach lo, this thing belongs to him. So, the Kesiv, if you opened up a Tehillim, a scroll of Tehillim, it's written Lamed Aleph, which means V'lo anachnu amo, we are not his nation. That's a little strange. V'lo anachnu amo, but we don't read it as a Lamed Aleph. That's why in the Siddur, they don't give it in the Siddur, they just tell you Lamed Vav. Lo anachnu amo means to him we are his nation. So the question becomes, how do you explain the logic of the Lamed Aleph reading? The Lamed Aleph reading would mean we are not God's nation. So the Ibn Ezra explains the way you do it is by putting the punctuation a little differently. Because it says, Du, know that Hashem is your God. Hu asanu, he made us. V'lo anachnu, comma, and not us. We didn't make ourselves. Meaning, if you read it with the Lamed Aleph, it's not lo anachnu amo. It's not that we are not his nations. Lo anachnu, meaning don't attribute our successes to ourselves. So, David HaMelech, actually, I shouldn't say David HaMelech, the author of this Mizmor is Moshe Rabbeinu. This is one of the 11 Tehillim that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. Moshe Rabbeinu is putting in a subtle double entendre. Meaning, by writing it Lamed Aleph, it's reminding you to be humble. Not to attribute your successes to you. All of our success comes from Hashem. Hashem made us. That doesn't just mean He created us. He made us in every way. He gave us our intellect. He gave us our abilities. He gave us the different opportunities in life that present themselves. So therefore, Hashem hu asanu, God made us, v'lo anachnu, and not us. Right, that's one reading. But the primary reading is v'lo anachnu amo, to him we are his nation, and we are tzon mariso, and Hashem is like the loving shepherd of the flock. That's an important addition. Because even when we're ignorant and confused and we wander around like sheep that don't know the way to go, Hashem is still the shepherd that cares about us. Right? So that's why it's a double thing. When we are righteous, we could be a nation, so to speak. When we're not so righteous, all right, so we're at least the sheep that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of. You know, it's interesting that obviously the metaphor that Hashem is the shepherd and we are the sheep is most pronounced in another Tehillim that we said, Shalashuddis, Mizmor LeDavid. This is the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. Hashem Roi Lo Echsar. Hashem is my shepherd. So I once saw a book. I don't have the book. I would actually like to get it. It's not a Jewish book. It was written by an Arab, a Christian, who himself was a shepherd in Israel. And he said, you guys don't understand what it means Hashem is a shepherd because you don't know what a shepherd does exactly. So he says, I think the book is called A Shepherd Looks at the 23rd Psalm. Yeah, and it's a small book, but he describes, again, Midrashim give us the description too, but he gave you much more detail. He describes how a shepherd has to take care of sheep. And then think about how Hashem has to take care of us the same way. And he makes the point that sheep have very, very poor eyesight. They don't see very well. They're not like goats. Goats are much... Sheep are timid. Sheep are afraid because they don't see. Also, because of their wool, if they fall over, they have a lot of difficulty getting up again. So they're skittish. They're frightened. They're scared. They look at the world and it's very frightening. Unlike a goat. Goats are very independent. You know, goats wander around. But sheep are different than goats. Sheep are timid creatures, and sheep are afraid. And that's why they travel in groups, like, you know, masses of sheep, because they feel safer in the numbers. And again, just like the Medrash says, the sheep falls over, how do you got to pick it up, you got to carry it to the water. The sheep is afraid to even approach the water because it's afraid it'll fall in, then become waterlogged. So he says, if you understand how much a shepherd has to be involved in taking care of the little sheep, you'll appreciate kind of what David HaMelech is using by that metaphor, because it's a very, very powerful idea that Hashem is our shepherd.
Yeah.
I think it's called a Shepherd Looks at the 23rd Psalm. I think that's it. It's an old book. I'm not even sure if it's in print anymore, but I'll see if it's around. Yep.
From this century or from previous century?
I think it's from this. I think it's around 50 years old. I think it's well, the 20th century, not from the 21st century. Yeah. So that's the idea of the sheep. And that's why it says both things. Amo, I am Hashem's nation. When I am a Baal Bechira, I make the right choices. I behave in a dignified, holy manner. And when I'm confused and don't really know what I'm doing, then I become the sheep that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of anyway. And then it concludes, Bo Shara Besoda, when you enter Hashem, this is Pasuk Dalet, when you enter Hashem's gates, do so with thanksgiving. Chatzei Rosov B'Tehillah, and when you enter the courtyards, again, this seems to fit more of Rashi's description, that you're going to the Beis HaMikdash, meaning it's the Korban Todah, because it's describing going through the gates, entering the courtyards. It seems to be a trajectory of moving to the temple. You enter with thanksgiving, and it culminates in praise. See, praise is a higher level, because thanksgiving is an egocentric idea, meaning I'm grateful for what Hashem did for me. That's a wonderful quality. But you graduate from Todah to Tehillah. Tehillah is you praise Hashem for everything, not just what happened to you, but by starting with gratitude, you reach a spiritual state of overall praise for the godless of Hashem. So that's kind of the progression. We start with me. What am I grateful for? But then from there we go to the godless Hashem. Hodulo, and you see the same thing carried through. Hodulo, give thanks to him, and then Baruch Hu Shmo, and then bless everything that he does. Ki tov Hashem, Hashem is goodly, olam chasto, his chesed is forever, v'ador v'ador, and to every generation, emunaso, that means his faithfulness. See, let me give a little comment on this. When we normally translate emuna, we commonly translate emuna as faith. Emuna in Tanakh does not mean faith. Emuna in Tanakh means faithfulness, meaning dependability, reliability, stability. So it's not that, if you want to be pedantic about it, grammatically precise, I do not have emuna in Hashem. Rather, I ascribe emuna to Hashem. In fact, the word ma'amin, ani ma'amin. So the standard English translation is I believe. No, ani ma'amin, I ascribe to the Almighty the quality of emuna, that you can depend on him, you can rely upon him. He's not fickle. He doesn't change. Right? That's emunah. Right? Yeah.
Hirsch has a very... Yeah. His guiding faith.
His guiding faith. Okay. Well,
that means that he's actively involved in pushing along.
Right. Yeah, but that's why we say kel emunah. We talk about God is a God of emunah. So emunah is a midah of God. It's not a midah of me. Okay, one final gematria I want to mention. it comes up sometimes. Tov. The gematria of Tov is 17. Right? Tov. Now, in gematrias, and I know Rabbi Grabstein mentions this often, we have standard gematrias, but then we have a phenomenon that is called mispar katan. Mispar katan means you simply factor out the tens, the hundreds, and the like. So, for example, Yud. Yud in the standard gematria is 10. In Mispar Katan, it's 1. Okay?
Drop the zeros.
Yeah, you drop all the zeros. It's called Mispar Katan. It's a form of gematria too. So the Shem Havaya, Yudke Vavke, in regular gematria is 26. Yud He and Vav He. In Mispar Katan, not too much changes, but the 10 becomes a 1. So in Mispar Katan, it's 17. So the gematria of Yudke Vavke in Mispar Katan is 17, because the Yud, instead of being a 10, is a 1. The He is 5, the Vav is 6, and the He is 5. Everything's the same. 3 of the 4 are the same. But in the Mispar Katan, the 10 becomes 1. So Tov is the Mispar Katan of the Shem Havaya. And Mispar Katan is Merames to a world where you don't see the fullness of Hashem's Chesed. It's concealed. It's diminished. Now, Chesed, on the other hand, is the gematria of 72. Now, we talk about this in Tanya. I don't want to be marach in it too much. But in Kabbalah, the Shem Havaya itself can be expanded by spelling out individual letters. And the largest expansion of Shem Havaya adds up to 72, and that's with the Mili of Yud. So let me give you the spelling. The Shem Havaya is a Yud and a He and a Vav and a He. If you spell out Yud, how do you spell Yud? Yud Vav Dalet. So Yud Vav Dalet equals 20. You spell He in Mila Yud, and you spell He with He Yud, which is 15. So Yud is spelled Yud Vav Dalet, which is 20. He is spelled He Yud, which is 15. Vav in Mila Yud is spelled Vav Yud Vav, which is 22. And the final He is He Yud, which is 15. So when you expand the Shem Havaya with the addition of the Yuds, you get a gematria 30, 50 of 72. And this is called the Shem of Hashem of 72, based on Miloy Yudin. And that's the same gematria as Chesed, because that's the fullness of the Shem Havaya. So therefore the Pasuk is saying, B'derech Remes, that if you have the attitude of seeing God's goodness, even when it is concealed, you will merit to see God's goodness in its expansiveness. Ki Tov. Tov is the Mispar Katan of 17, which is Shem Havaya in its smallest form, and Chesed is the Shem Havaya in its largest form, and the attitude affects everything. If you see the kindness of God in the less obvious scenarios, that elicits Hashem's Chesed in more and more open and obvious ways. Okay, so we'll stop here. Again, it's a beautiful tale to think about, and Bezos Hashem, we should incorporate these lessons.